position today, and I really debated whether to have anger. The I don't want to leave you all feeling angry, or but I will leave you on a very positive note today, and get through the anger topic too. I have taught classes at Overlake Hospital on the east side in Seattle on anger for at least 20 years, could be 25 years. The classes always fill. People come in always feeling very tense. You know, it's like we just kind of walk in like this and sit down. And so I try and lighten it up a little bit because we're not going to be angry in this class. We're just going to learn about anger. Okay, so to get us started, tell me what you know about anger. What do you know to be true about anger?
For me, it's really physical.
It's physical in that you
have an energy that.
Okay, so
instantly
yeah,
and out when
well,
I'm
and mad. That's a very important point because it's not like I am so angry. That is not what anger is about. Your heart beats faster. Your adrenaline pumps. You prepare for flight or fight. And some people, you know, do all kinds of things physically when they're angry, and we know what all of those are. Okay, what else do we know to be true about anger?
It's pretty quick. It's not necessarily always premeditated. It's usually a quick response.
Yeah, it really is. It's. I think I said it before. It's just absolutely fascinating to me because it's like the straw that broke the camel's back. All of a sudden, you know, you're just behaving like the good mom and dad that you always are, and then all of a sudden, mainly, quite often, it's from an external stress that you might be feeling, and then the child does something, and then boom, you're lashing out at that person. So yes, can be very quick. Yes.
In the expression of it in the moment, there's great satisfaction followed by immediate guilt.
Right. There's some kind of a cathartic feel, and then it's definitely that feeling of guilt, and we all know that guilt and parenting go hand in hand, and so we have to do something to relieve that guilt, and you know, we want to do our anger. Let me make it really clear that we're going to be doing this, talking about anger for 45 minutes, and then I'm going to talk about the elements of the nurturing parent, which can combat anger feelings that you have towards your child. But this is not, you're not going to walk away today, and nor do the people in Overlake Hospital, and they walk away from 4 hours of anger, thinking that anger is going to disappear from your home. That is not the goal of this class. Okay, anger is a feeling. We all have it. It's not going to disappear. Children have it. We have it. It's not going to disappear. What we hope to have happen in time is that we can learn to communicate our anger in a civilized way rather than in a way that's destructive to ourselves or our children. And so that's kind of the goal of all of this. And we're going to talk about what to do when children are angry and what to do when we're angry. So what else? What else do you know about anger? Yes?
I know it. For me, it needs to be dealt with when it's little irritated things need to be dealt with, or they come together. When you get 50 irritable things together, then it becomes one big,
absolutely
large explosion.
Yeah, and the guru of anger is, or feelings, is John Gottman from the University of Washington, and that's exactly what he says too, that quite often anger is a secondary emotion covering up a primary emotion. So for instance, if you have a toddler, and your toddler's going into the street, and you pull the child back and say, don't run in the street, you're going to get hit by a car. What's the primary feeling?
Fear.
Okay, so yeah, so if we address the fear without having to shift into anger, we probably do a better job. But I mean, in a safety issue like that, you know, who's going to be beautiful about it? And also, the other thing with little kids, if you say to a child, or anybody really, sweetheart, don't run into the street, you're not communicating honestly, and children are confused, actually. So if you're clear and say, no, no running into the street, mommy's going to keep you safe, and our, you know, have a consistency about what you're saying and what you're feeling, you communicate more effectively to your children. And so that there's that kind of out of control expressions of anger, and we all know what that's like. And then there's also those sincere, kind of clear expressions of anger that can make a difference in your children's lives, that they communicate sincerity. that's an okay thing to do. Okay? What else, other facts that you know about anger? Things that you know to be true about anger? Yes?
Repressed sadness.
Pardon?
Repressed sadness
comes
out through anger.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we were talking about earlier, that if you can get to the primary emotion, which is sadness, then it won't come out as anger. And that is just so often what we do, is that we don't address that primary emotion, and for whatever reason. And I don't know why. And I think that's another thing that's important to know about anger. What you learned about anger and how you express anger happened long, 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 long time ago. And it's deeply embedded in who you are. And so to attempt to change that, it's hard. It takes a lot of work. And so I ask you to be patient with yourself, because that guilt can, it can just, you know, draw us down, and we're less effective when we're guilt burdened. And so if you can communicate your anger to your children effectively once a week, give yourself a lot of credit. Because if you're, say for instance you have 2 or 3 blow-ups with your kids now, and after this session you go back home and try some of these approaches and techniques, and you get my handout and you work on it a little bit, and you're down now to 1 blow up a week, that is really good, okay? Give yourself credit for that, because it's not going to go away instantly. I just know that. I know that about myself. And, you know, I've taught these classes forever, and as I told you before, you know, I can turn on a dime and there I am, right? And my kids don't live at home anymore. So anyway. Okay, what else do we know to be true about anger? Yes?
Actions taken in anger may be disproportionate to the triggering event.
Absolutely. Well said. That, yeah, we do things, we say things in anger that, as you said, just to reiterate, are disproportionate to whatever that incident all started out from. Yeah. Okay? Yes?
I found just what you said before, personally, that for me as a guy, to say to my teenager, my stepdaughter, I'm really hurt, mm-hmm. I'm really sad, was a real turning point. Because that's what I was primarily feeling.
Uh-huh.
Instead, I would stuff it, stuff it, stuff it.
Right.
And then I'd be angry.
Right.
But I was sad. I was hurt. Because here I'm this big guy, and this little teenager was able to hurt me.
Yeah.
You know? And but I had to say, it's hurt. It's
yeah.
Pain.
How did she respond to that?
I don't know. I mean, it was better, but she didn't. She kind of just, okay, but it wasn't this the opening of the closet.
Right,
and
right,
everything.
Yeah.
But it was good. It was better for me.
Okay.
To say, I'm sad, I'm hurt
yeah.
by that, and I expressed myself, I got it out, and then I didn't have to keep moving up to
sure.
where I get angry. Because I was getting to a point where I said, well, I don't want to blow up, so I'll be quiet.
Right.
So get this big
so
chasm.
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead, said, you know, I'm really sad. I'm
yeah.
really hurt. And that, I think that was a real turning
yeah.
point.
Good for you.
For me.
Okay, great. Somebody else had their hand up. Yeah.
This isn't so much about anger with regard to my children, because I didn't figure this out soon enough. But when people are angry with me, I get defensive rather.
Of course. Yeah.
And I learned that if I get curious instead about what's the source of the anger and ask myself why. Where's this coming from?
Uh-huh.
That would help a lot, and I wouldn't waste a lot of our time with
right.
Defense.
Yeah, good point. And I, you know, so what I'm doing today is I'm going to talk to you about what to do, give you some ideas for what to do when your children are angry. Not when they're angry at you, but they come in the door and they're angry about something else. Well, and when they're angry at you. But the hardest, and then what to do when you're welling up with anger and how to manage some of those feelings. But the hardest is just what you described, which is, you know, you say to your child, no, I can't let you do that. That's dangerous. As a responsible parent, I can't allow that. And then they get defensive, or we accuse them of something, and they get defensive, and then they, you know, you're the worst, most controlling, the meanest, the, you know, parent in the whole world, and so then it just starts to escalate out of control. But your suggestion is, say it again.
Get curious.
Get curious.
About where this anger is coming from.
Okay.
And what's the root cause.
Yeah. Yeah, what's the root cause? And we really, that takes a lot of work, right, as a parent to say, now what is it that's really bothering you? I really don't kind of understand. Somebody described that as the, who was that detective that, I can't remember his name now.
Columbo.
The Columbo effect. You know, it's like, so now you're telling me this just doesn't make sense to me, so can you just do a little bit more, and so that somebody actually wrote about that in an article about kids one time, used the Columbo effect. So anyway, did anybody else have anything else, anything they know to be true about anger?
Well, yeah. I don't know it to be true. It's more of a question, but now he talked about trigger. Why is it that the tiniest thing could be a trigger? And how do you recognize that
right.
and stop that from happening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about a few things that it can be a buildup. And then also, fear is a huge reason for a trigger, and we'll kind of get into that in a few minutes. But also, it can be something that you learn. So something that's a trigger for me would not be a trigger for you. And so we all, it's a very individual thing from our experience, from our past, who knows what. And so, you know, it's probably good to identify what those triggers are and be curious about them and see what the source of it is. But a lot of times it's based in fear. And also, you know why else? Because we've never done this before. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that. If you went to work and your boss said, okay, today you have a new computer program to learn and nobody's going to help you with this, okay? And so, and by the end of the day, I expect you to be an expert on it, and then tomorrow it's going to change. And so then you're going to have to figure out that too. And then if you get another, go to another computer, your other child, that's going to be different with that computer. I mean, think how frustrated you would be. And so we just don't have tools. You know, we take, you know, classes to learn how to drive cars and use computers and all those things. But when it comes to kids, we just don't have the skills. And then the other thing, another element of anger that, in many behaviors between parents and children, but we all know that children like consistency and routine, right? We all know the importance of a bedtime routine, right? So you get your child, you know, the child brushes their teeth and they go potty and then you get the jammies on and then you read a book and sing a song and say a prayer and tuck the child in bed. And all of those little behaviors are very nice and predictable and eases the child into sleep, okay? So then you go downstairs and you open your magazine, turn on the television, you need a little time to relax, and then you
turn up to bed right now.
Turns up. Then you open your magazine, and you look at the television, you hear again.
Get up to bed right now, I'm going to be really rain.
That child goes up and lies down. Then the third time up the stairs, down the stairs, you put your child in the bed, slam the door, go to bed, I'm going to stay right here with the door shut until you fall asleep. The child falls asleep. What I want you to know is that those three trips down the stairs are part of the bedtime routine. Yeah. See? And children thrive on consistency and routine. And so to break that routine is really hard. I mean, it's not impossible, but it takes a lot of work. It takes 3 days to 3 weeks to change those kinds of routines that you've established in your home. See, I told you I'm the bearer of bad news. Okay, here's some more facts about anger. One, and you all know these, anger is contagious, okay? So one parent comes home, they've had a terrible day at work, the clients have insulted the parent, didn't know how to use that computer program, you were embarrassed in front of your staff at a staff meeting, so you can't yell and scream at those people at work, so you come in and take it out on your spouse. And then the spouse yells at the older child. Then the older child yells at the younger child, and the younger child yells at the dog. And it just goes from one person to the next, and you all have experienced it, I'm sure. Another fact about anger is anger seldom changes or improves children's behavior. Don't you wish it would? Don't you wish you could say, I'm never going to do that again, and the child would say, okay, I'll never do it again. But it's seldom ever changes or improves children's behavior. I will say that occasionally, because you are communicating passion and sincerity, and I'll tell you this story. So a 12-year-old boy came in, you know, teenager, comes in, sits down in the living room, puts his feet up on the glass coffee table. You know, kind of looks at his dad. His dad says, "Get those shoes off the table. That's not what we do in this house. I don't like to see that kind of behavior. Get them down right now." John kind of takes them down. So kind of seething, kind of mad. And then the dog's dad says, "You know, we're going to be going fishing in Montana this summer. Let's get out the maps and see which rivers we're going to be fishing on." So he let it like 3 minutes go by, and then he re-engaged the child, okay? And so that was a situation where I'm sure that 12-year-old boy never put his shoes back on the glass coffee table. Why did he do it that day? I don't know. But it didn't escalate. It was clear. And it just never happened. So that's why I say seldom, but occasionally it can. Okay, we've also already talked about this, I think, but I'll reiterate it just to say that quite often anger is displaced, that the anger that I talked about with the parent who had the bad day at work, the computer program, the insult from the staff meeting, the disrespect from the clients, if that's where his anger needed to be placed, but he displaced it and came in the door, or he or she, and took it out on the spouse. And that's, we do that, quite often, and children, frankly, are easy targets, and that's what's unfair about it. Okay, and another thing I want to mention is that sometimes anger episodes can be related to hormonal imbalances in people and also related to drug and alcohol use. And if that's the situation in your family or some other family that you know, that family needs help beyond what I'm giving people today. Those issues need to be dealt with before any of this other stuff is going to be effective. And one time I was teaching this class and a mom raised her hand and she said, it took me until I was 16 to realize that it wasn't me who my dad was mad at, or it wasn't me that was triggering his anger, it was his third martini. And so, but it took her until she was 16 to learn that. So, of course, we want to prevent that from happening. Okay, another fact about anger is that it withers intimacy between parents and children. I mean, if you're a kid and your parent is erratic and blows up from time to time and you don't know when or why, you're going to stay away from that parent, right? Because you don't want to be the target. Other children, though, seem to kind of like to bug you, right? And figure, because it's like, so let's say in your home, this just makes you crazy, just makes you go out of control. And so your child's had a bad day at school, and 5-year-old comes home, and you're with the baby, taking care of the baby, and child needs a little attention, a little snack, and but you're busy, and so the child just does a little of this. Stop that right now! Oh, now I got her attention. Now things are the way they have been. And so there's some kids who will get attention. Children need attention, right? And so we want to give it to them for the positive and pleasant behaviors they exhibit, rather than to get in a habit of having those negative interactions between parent and child. Okay, also anger can cause alienation between parent and child for many, many reasons. Children distance themselves from parents who are angry at them. I think we've mentioned most of them. I just want you to know that it's very gratifying, getting back to this situation, it's very gratifying for a child to be in control of your anger. And so we want them to be in control of our joy and our interest and all kinds of things, but we don't want them to be in control of our anger.
Excuse me.
Yes.
One up here, sorry. I kind of showed up late, so I was wondering if we discussed it, or if you mentioned that anger is a choice.
Pardon?
That anger is a choice also.
Do you feel it is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you elaborate on that?
You can choose to be angry, or you can choose to, or you can just look at it as anger is a natural human emotion.
Right.
How you choose to react to it, whether you choose to engage in anger or not.
Right. It takes some work.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important, thank you for mentioning that we do want to definitely see anger as an emotion. It is. It's the negative accompanying behavior that we're trying to manage and deal with in a way that's civil, to the people that we live with. I mean, if, you know, there's all kinds of ways to communicate that, but we want to do it in ways that aren't going to be destructive to people and relationships. So, okay, great, yes.
There's many forms of anger that are very healthy also.
Okay.
Even for children.
Are you asking me or telling me?
I guess I'm debating
okay.
the last one, that it, as much as they are a choice, it still happens and it's still a healthy process.
Oh, yeah.
And that I think my feeling is that when we try to control the anger, it just develops that emotion more, and that if we give it a place,
right,
that it's really not needed as much as.
Right. So where's the place we're going to put it then?
We don't have to react to it.
Okay. Then we don't. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Some
yeah.
people
but,
label.
Pardon?
Some people label it differently.
Right.
Like, when my mom was disappointed, look out. She wasn't angry, but she was just disappointed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I knew that things, something
yeah.
bad was coming my way. She was disappointed.
Right. And so, I mean, there's all kinds of things. I think about Terrell over there today doing Tai Chi. We should have this anger episode, and then we should have moved into Tai Chi. Because my husband, when he is feeling those frustrations and stress around work or something that I've done and he's feeling, he starts in doing his Tai Chi moves, you know? And so there's different things like that that we can do in our day. I mean, that's one thing, too. We can do it and children can do it. Any kind of tactile activity. I mean, why do kids have Play-Doh? Why, after we've baked bread and kneaded bread, do we feel better? Why do kids love mud and sand and dirt play, again, that just releases some of those feelings. So if you can see kids when they're beginning to well up with anger, or if we can recognize when we're beginning to well up with anger, any kind of unstructured physical activity, gardening in the dirt, all of those things get rid of that anger. But there's, I guess what I want to clarify is it's not, a lot of people think it's suppress, it's not to suppress it, it's to deal with it. And yourself first, and then address the anger that you're feeling, you know, if it was provoked by another person or whatever. So, yeah.
Could you say a little more, please, about the child who seems to, like you said, intentionally
yeah.
provoke?
Yeah.
I know, I mean, I understand that for some, negative attention is better than none,
right.
but I can remember saying to my daughter, I give you all kinds of positive attention.
Right.
Why would you look for negative attention?
Exactly. It's because it's predictable. Children like predictability in their life. So we have to, and I'm saying this because I'm a professional parent educator, but I have a daughter who can still push those buttons. And it's still hard because it's embedded in your relationship. It's not. And the hard part is, when you have little kids, is that we're the responsible party. Yes, I'm mad at your daughter for provoking you. I am mad at her along with you. But we're the ones who have to stop letting them push those buttons, because we're the responsible party. And I wish it weren't that way.
When you feel helpless, that's where
yeah.
the anger starts coming. Then you have some tools.
Right.
Yeah.
And let me get to the tools. But one of the things that I think that you can do when children start that you know, what if it's this thing or whatever it is surrender the moment and sit on the floor and just sit down and just take some deep breaths and collect yourself and along with the child and don't say anything. And then it's not easy, right? It's not easy. But if you can surrender the moment, it can then pass. But you've got to train yourself to do it. Okay, so what do you do when a child is, oh, first let me ask, what triggers kids' anger? What do they get mad about?
They're afraid.
A lot of times it is that they're afraid. It can be, yep,
cheating
fear.
At school.
Pardon?
Cheating at school. My
cheating?
Son.
Okay.
He doesn't cheat, and so he gets mad.
Oh, he gets mad when somebody else. I would be mad at that
time.
Too. Okay. I'm. Yeah. Yes.
When you set boundaries.
When you have to draw a line, because kids are on the road to independence, and they want to do whatever. And when we say no, that's not okay in this family. then they can get mad. Okay? What else?
Not being in control.
Not being in control, absolutely. And that's for all, many of these things are for all of us. But when you feel like there's overwhelming episodes in your life that you have no control over, quite often we get mad.
And I think of it as a toddler.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's angry because they don't have any control of, we're leaving now. And
right.
Now.
Absolutely, yeah. And toddlers and teens can get mad also for absolutely no reason at all. Just because life is really tough for them. And at least with little kids, they're little and cute. With teenagers, they're big and not so cute. So it's harder.
I think they get mad a lot because they've demonstrated their incompetence in something.
Yeah, if you're trying to do something and kids are in the process of learning, so they're trying to follow a pattern for Legos and the Lego structure is falling down or whatever, they get mad. Or if they can't button a button, they're two and they really need to do it by stuff and they just can't get it and that makes them mad. Yeah. Okay? What else triggers children's anger?
They think something's unfair.
Especially kids as they go into elementary school, I mean, they have a very strong, it's social justice, right? We talk about that in the Lutheran Church, and when they see that they're, you know, a victim of social injustice, they get really mad. Okay, a couple others. Judy kind of mentioned this, but I'll underline it. When they're moved from one activity to another without warning, kids get mad. Any kind of change, even change for the better, if you're moving from a small little house and you're going to now move to a big house where everybody's going to have more room and a playground and all of that, still, that can make people really upset and angry. If they feel overpowered and over-controlled, if you're controlling every movement of your child's life, whether toddlers or 10-year-olds or teens, they can feel angry. When they feel rejected from friends as a response to grief, unmet expectations, and we're all that way. I mean, if you had come to Holden, you expect in the July that we have mostly sunshine and, you know, nice days and it rains every single day and ruins your time here, you're going to be a little ticked, right? Because your expectation is that you'll have better weather. If you say to a toddler, if a toddler says to you, I want a cracker, and you get out the crackers and you put it on their high chair tray, and as you put the cracker on their high chair tray, it breaks in two. Well, that is not what they were expecting. It looks different. It probably tastes different. That is not the one I want, okay? And so they're going to be mad about that. And of course, I think we've said this, but I want to underline it, when they're stopped from doing what they want to do. And this was a piece of research that they did with toddlers and temper tantrums, is that they gave a toddler, they wanted to see at what age children get provoked, and researchers had to do this. But anyway, so they let the child play with a little toy, right? And then they put the toy into a clear plastic box that the child gave it to the child. Well, I mean, the child was frustrated beyond, there's ethics involved in that. They can only, be frustrated for 15 seconds or something. But certainly, when they're stopped from doing what they want to do. So, anyway, those are some of the reasons why children, why children have temper tantrums or get angry. So, the question is then, what do you do as a responsible parent who wants to help them, a child, through this? Okay, I'm going to run through them really quickly because we don't have a whole lot of time today. The first one is that, and this is a controversial thing. I used to say this, and I'm kind of changing what I say now because I've read more about it, that if a child is hitting you or destroying property, you want to contain or restrain the child, okay? And now I'm going to change it to say you want to keep the child from hitting you or destroying property. The reason I say that is because I've also read new research now that says when a child is contained, if you hold the child, it often makes them more angry. And this is one of those things where you have to know the child. Some children really like to be hugged and held. And I was just talking to a grandma today whose grandson is autistic, and she said that when they learned about this, that they were told that when he had a temper tantrum to get a blanket, wrap him in a blanket, and hold him. So all kids are different, but the underlying message here is that if It's not okay to destroy property, and it's not okay to hit other people, and it's definitely not okay for your children to hit you. And so, or grandparents or anybody, right? Are you with me on that? So you want to block their blows and be really clear, no. And the line you use is, I am not going to let you do that, okay? Because the child can't control himself or herself. And so if you say, you're not gonna do that, well, it's like, well, yeah, I am. But if you say, I'm not gonna allow you to do it, I'm gonna keep you from doing that, and see that that happens, the child actually feels safer because they know that they are out of control. But they've got you, their protectorate, to keep them in control. And this is, you know, I'm sorry, but every one of my classes has a little bit of guilt for all the parents. And this is the piece of guilt today. And here is it. It is. I want you to think about the fact that you are children's protectorate, emotionally, physically, and emotionally. We know we keep children safe, right, from cars and all kinds of things. But also, we provide emotional protection. So if a child is out of control, and then you get out of control, it's a very scary situation for a child. Because it's like, who is going to manage? Who's going to take care of this situation? I'm out of control, and she's out of control. And so, you know, what's going to happen here? And so we always work on good, you know, emotional health. And there's going to be times when you blow it. But that's why we're here today. So that we can progress and have less of that in our home. Okay, so contain and restrain the child. If your child is bigger than you, and your child is attacking you, or destroying property in the home, you need to get away, okay? And you need help, again, probably beyond what I'm giving you today. But please do not allow your, you do not deserve it. It's not good and healthy for your child either. Okay,
I just have a question about that. My five-year-old, he hits me. He knows that he's not supposed to because he doesn't do it hard, but he'll just, you know, like
yeah.
And it's very clear to me that he, if there wasn't a consequence, he would hit me harder. But I can't get him to stop doing that.
Yeah.
So when you say, I'm not going to let you do
right.
that, but
can, what if, so what if you block him? Can you anticipate when it's going to happen?
I suppose to an extent, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what I would encourage you to do is to block his blows and I'm sure you're really clear. What do you do when he does that?
I say it's not okay.
Yeah.
It's not okay to hit me, it's not okay to hit anyone.
Right. Okay. And then what happens?
It sort of depends.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll keep doing it.
Sometimes he'll stop doing it. And so how often does he do it?
Basically whenever he really doesn't get his way.
Okay.
When he's really angry.
So is it like once or twice a day?
Oh,
or
probably maybe a couple of times a week.
Okay, and so he's five? That's very, very normal. Okay, that's very, very normal. And so what I would encourage you to do is to start, you know, thinking about some of the things that I've talked about today. And now I get the impression from you that you're just a really nice mom. And so, do you have a mean face?
Yeah.
Okay, good. We all need a mean face. We all need to be, because I want you to say clearly, no, this is not okay. I am not going to let you do this. It is not okay. And so, you know, we can run outside, and we can go swing, or we can go whatever to get rid of your anger, but it is not okay for you to hit mom. And be really, really clear about that. And so it's not a punishment. That's another fact about anger, is that we can't punish it away. And that is what is so hard about this, because we think that, you know, if we just do, if we get back at that child in some way, you know, stick them in their room for 30 minutes or whatever, then they'll think, okay, I don't like being in my room, so I'm not going to strike my mother again. It's usually not effective. Yeah.
Choice for your child to express that anger, except not hitting it.
Okay.
When you
that was kind of a 60s cathartic thing that we would do because it's too much of a target anymore. And so we try to do other kinds of physical things. I mean, but I remember my dad used to say to me, just get a hold of yourself. I mean, what was that about? I don't know. But anyway, but so we want to put it somewhere. What you're saying is actually point two. The first one is restrain or contain. The second one is put your child's anger into words, okay? And if you just want to use a sound bite, you're mad because you didn't get another cookie. You're mad because I won't let you throw the ball in the house, whatever it is. And it serves, and I think this is the hardest one because we're starting to well up with anger, right? And please understand, if you don't learn anything else about this today, that when we're angry, when our children provoke our anger, and we feel, I'm a good mom, and now he's just mad at me, and this is not fair. See, we have that feeling of social justice, too. And I lost my thought. Where was I? Okay, anyway, put your child's anger into words. Oh, it serves two purposes. One is that to say to a three-year-old or a two-year-old, use words. It's like, what do you mean? I'm just learning language. I don't have the words. I don't know what to say here. And so that's why you want to say it for the child. You're mad because. And then the other reason, it says, it's empathetic. I understand where you're coming from. I'm still not going to give you the third cookie, but I understand that's what you want. And the point, it came back to me now, that when you're angry, you're thinking. See, all of you are listening, and you're right here in your cerebral cortex, right? You're all learning, and you're, you know, being very adult and mature and taking all this in. But when you're angry, you shift into a lower, I don't know a lot about brain science, but a little bit, and you shift into a lower functioning of the brain, and so does your child. We call that the reptilian brain, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're mad, and when your child's mad, I don't want you to see a person standing there, right? I want you to see a reptile. Would you reason with a reptile? Would you use explanations or logic with a reptile? No. You have to wait till this person morphs back into the human being that he is, or for yourself, morphs back in. And then, so often what we do is try and talk children out of their anger. We'll say, there's no reason to be angry. You had two cookies yesterday, you'll have two tomorrow, and so there's no reason to be angry. And in fact, when you do that, quite often, it makes the child more angry because they have to prove to you that indeed, this is a reason to be angry. So that's why that validation, but we have to remember, kids can't, none of us can hear a lot, but they can hear that sound bite. You're mad because I won't let you throw the ball in the house. And so it's empathy and using words. Because what we want is eventually for the child to say, now I want to check, this is a check on all of you. If your child stood there, how's your son, 5 years old? And he's throwing the ball in the house, and you say, no, I'm taking the ball and putting it on the refrigerator. You cannot throw the ball in the house. And he's just mad. But if he were to say, Mom, I got this new ball. I really, really like it. I was being careful that it didn't hurt anything in the house. And it's raining outside, and I can't go outside and play. And I'm mad because you put it on top of the refrigerator. Would that be okay?
Heck yes.
Okay. Because if your expectation is that your child is saying, oh, it's not a problem. Thanks for looking out for the fact that I need to learn how to behave well in the house and use balls appropriately. That is not going to happen in this American culture today.
If it does, be afraid.
Pardon?
I said, if it does, be afraid.
Exactly.
What are you doing with my child?
Well, when I was a child, I wouldn't have said anything, but I would have seethed within, right? And so that's why I teach parent education, because I have to, you know, help all those other children out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind. So anyway, put their children's anger into words. That's what we want to do, and that's probably the most important thing that we can do. Okay, the third one is stay near to the child. Quite often, we say to a child, go in your bedroom or go over there, and I'm encouraging you to provide emotional protection for the child. Now, some children, I'll get your question in just a minute, some children will say, get away from me, and so we do want to get away. But we want to kind of monitor the situation, okay? Check in with the child, how are you doing? We don't want to desert the child, and so, because doing so provides emotional protection. Yes?
It's not true of teenagers, too.
Yeah.
So still stay near them.
Stay near. I mean, you have to read their cues, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so that leads me to a story. And so when my middle child, oldest son, was a senior in high school, it was December, and it's a very tense time for kids, right? Because they're waiting to get accepted to college and going out from home and all this stuff. So this is just a kind of normal evening around the fall household. And my younger son, I said to him, Alan, would you put ice water on the table for dinner? Because it was dinner time. And so he really likes mechanical things, and so we had one of those refrigerators where you put, you know, the glass in and it fills up with ice, and he loves that. So if you push it, then so at our house you get lots of ice and a little bit of water because he likes to use this mechanism. So anyway, so then oldest son, middle child, comes downstairs and he says, I don't like a lot of ice in my ice water. I like just a little bit of ice in my ice water. And so, you know, I'm saying, we're not supposed to use sarcasm with kids, but I forgot that. So I said, you know, if you wanted a little bit of ice in your ice water glass, you could probably take care of that yourself. And he said, you and Alan were down here plotting. You were trying to figure out what to make me angry, and you figured it out. And this was it. And I mean, you can see, right, how this situation could easily get out of control. Okay, 25 years of teaching anger classes. All right, dad goes this way, brother goes this way. I am left with this seething teenager in the kitchen. And so, you know, and oh, I remember. What I did was I grabbed the keys to the car because I thought he was so mad. Safety, remember, we have to think safety. I thought he was going to leave, and I didn't want him to leave angry in the car. And so he went up to his room. I could hear him, you know, stomping around back up there. And so then finally came down, sat at the kitchen table, and started to sob these mad, mad tears. All my friends have been accepted to college. I don't even know if I want to go to college. I had a really hard time meeting friends in high school. I don't know if I'm going to have any friends in college. I remember popping out of his face. And I, you know, I knew saying, I can see you're really angry. Situation. And so I walked over. I did not look at him and sat at the kitchen table. I just sat there with him. And within about, I mean, you think it's 45 minutes, but I think it was probably 3 minutes. He got up, it was 7:45, went upstairs and went to bed. And then, and of course, I'm up all night, right? What did I do wrong when he was 2? What did I do wrong when he was 4? What did I do wrong when he was 10? Anyway, the next morning, he came down, and he comes in the kitchen, and he says, hi, Mom. And so, anyway, and so then the rest of the story is the following, that I wrote a column in a local newspaper at the time, and Jerry, who's now a writer himself and editor, he was obviously interested in that. He would always read my columns in the newspaper. So about 3 months later, I wrote about this episode in the paper. And he was reading it, and he said to me, was this about me? He did not remember that episode. I mean, that's the craziness of that toddlers and teenagers can go through. And you can see how I could have very easily escalated that episode and made it really ugly, right? And so that's why, you know, just sitting at the table, right, I know that was the best thing to do.
Uh-huh. But when they leave, and you know, I mean, granted, you don't let them run out of the house and
take
car keys, but when they leave,
right.
the best thing is to let them go.
But if he hadn't come downstairs, I would have checked on him. I mean, I'm not going to push myself on him, but I know, yeah, I mean, he's not finished yet. He's not an adult, right? Okay, a couple other things. Don't give in. If you say to a child no, you all will from time to time. If a child really wants a doll and you think, I just can't deal with this right now, I'm just going to buy it. Or, you know, there's not a parent of a toddler who's not going to you know, give that toddler a whole cracker and eat the broken one themselves. I mean, we're all going to do that from time to time, but we don't want to give in because then children learn that anger gets them what they want. And they're, you know, they're going to find out sometime in school or work or somewhere that that's not how we get along in the world. Okay, also, don't feed the anger. I said that, but I'm going to say it again. Don't feed the anger by trying to talk the child out of their anger. Of course, don't spank or hit the child. We're not here to talk about spanking. But think about the time you've been most angry, and if somebody were to strike you, it would only make the situation worse. Don't distract the child. And if they're under age 3, we distract all the time, and that's absolutely fine. The child's having the fifth temper tantrum a day, and a fire engine's going by to say, oh, there's a fire engine, and they're going to be over the anger, right, because they're distracted. But when children are under 3, over 3, we want them to live through that anger that they're feeling, come out on the other side, and learn that they're okay. It builds their character, okay?
I've been working with birth through 5 for 16 years in the home, and I've trained the kids who are, you know, 2 and 3 to focus on breathing, and it's nothing is cuter than seeing a 2-year-old go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they get that oxygen in their bodies, and it really is amazing.
Yeah.
It distracts them from what they're doing, and they get the oxygen, and it calms them.
That's very, very good. And if we can all do that, that's kind of my short list.
I tried to do it when I started.
Yeah, no, that's your short list. That if a child is angry, to take a few deep breaths yourself, shift into low gear, and move toward the child. You're always going to be more effective if you do that, in rather than trying to make it. Okay. Then allow the child time to return to their emotional equilibrium. It takes time. Remember, I said it was physiological. Your heart beats faster, your adrenaline pumps, you prepare for fight or flight. So it takes time to return to your emotional equilibrium. And then, lastly, and it could be the next day, then you explain the situation. Use logic, reason. When they've shifted back into their cerebral cortex or using the better part of their brain, then you can explain the situation to the kids. Okay, any questions about that? Yes?
What about, we're talking about, sometimes our kids say, you can tell they're angry, you say, well, you know, what's going on? Never mind.
Yeah.
And then they, and then they leave the room, and then you might say, I want to solve it. I want to, you know, let's work it through.
Right.
And then they need space.
Right.
And so I guess maybe it's the let them have their space and go check in with them later type of situation.
That's it. Yeah, as hard as it is, because we'd like to fix it right then for them. I mean, it's all hard. Yeah, if this were easy, you know, we wouldn't be here. Okay, so the next part of all of this is, and I just wanted to say too, I have a handout on anger that if you want, there's a handout here that will give you my contact information, and I'll send you a Word document if you're interested with all this information on there. So now we're going to talk about parents' anger briefly, and I think this is probably the best piece of information that I can give you about your own anger and dealing with your own anger. And this is a quote from John Gottman's book, Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. It's called The Heart of Parenting. Okay, this is Gottman. Use anger to demonstrate passion and sincerity. So long as you can communicate it respectfully, while avoiding these forms of anger, contempt, that's the worst thing anybody could ever do, or sarcasm, oh, just great, there you go again, making me proud of you, or derogatory comments, you slob. So let me say that again. Use anger to demonstrate passion and sincerity. I am not going to let you go on an unchaperoned weekend to Ocean Shores. That is not going to happen, okay? Or, you cannot, it's not okay to hit the baby. I can't let one child I love hit another child I love. No, that is not okay, all right? So, you know, we're going to be passionate and sincere about it. Okay, we're not going to use contempt, sarcasm, or derogatory comments. Focus on the child's actions rather than the character. I mean, so you would say, I'm, you know, I'm not going to let you hit the baby. So we're focusing on the action, right? We were not going to say you're just an unloving, hurtful person. We're not going to do that because that's attacking the child's character, okay? Make your comments specific. Tell your child how his actions affect you. I get really scared when I think about you driving with your friends to Ocean Shores without a chaperone. How will I explain this to your grandmother if something happens? Okay. If you're mad and can continue to talk rationally, leading to some level of understanding, stay engaged. Okay? Tell your child what's on your mind, listen to the child's response, and keep talking. All right? If, on the other hand, you are so intensely angry that you can't think clearly, take a break from the situation and return later when you feel less aroused. That's in his book, posted on your refrigerator. It's probably the best piece of information that I can give you. Also retreat if you're on the verge of doing or saying destructive things, hitting or insulting the child. Okay. I have lots more on parents' anger, but I want to talk a little bit more about the nurturing parent. Any questions about your own anger? Does that all make sense to you? Okay, I see a lot of agreement, things to work on. Yes?
Any comments on passive comments and passive anger?
Can you give me an example?
Well, my husband probably could. Just the kind of the side comment. You know, anger and where you're not coming straight out at them.
Right, yeah.
But you're making the side from, well, yeah. You know, maybe some of it's the sarcasm. But
right. So, let's see. Do I have anything really good to say about that? I mean, what I encourage you to do when kids do that kind of thing is to put, for instance, I'll just give you one example. A little girl that a mom was in a parenting class, and this little girl's dad was an airplane pilot. And they would go on trips where the dad was there, and of course all the flight attendants, you know, would come around this little girl. She was probably 3 and a half. And they, you know, would want to fuss over her because she was so cute and all of that. And so this little girl didn't like it. So when she would kind of, you know, grimace at the flight attendants or make, you know, faces like that. Or it could be a side dig or anything like that. What I encourage you to work on is to say for the child what would be appropriate for them to say. Oh, you're mad at me. I can tell by what you said that you're still mad that I didn't buy you that dress. Or you really don't like talking to the flight attendants who you don't know. I mean, it takes a lot of work on your part because it irritates us, right? We're mad, and so we don't think as well. But when you're at your parenting best, and you can put into words what the child, what would be appropriate for the child to say, you're probably being most effective. Okay. All right. Okay. So just another little tip about all of this is that if you're mad at your kids because they're draining your financial resources, which they are. But if you're taking that anger out on your children, that's not fair, okay? And so then you need help beyond what I'm giving you today. If you're mad at your kids because they're draining your energy and you just don't have time for yourself, which kids do, they take away the time that you have for yourself and they do drain your energy. I encourage again, if you feel like you're taking those frustrations out on your children, that's unfair parenting. That's something you need to work on beyond what we're doing in this group. So we need to take care of ourselves. But, you know, I wish that we didn't have to be so responsible in parenting. But unfortunately, we do. Okay, I'm trying to find this last piece of information that I want to give you. And I can't find it. Where is it?
Can I make a comment?
Yes, please.
Kind of in regard to that, what you just said?
Uh-huh.
Just as an example, I don't know, but I drive school bus for a living.
Oh, you're the, yeah,
hi. Yeah, I'm a school bus driver. And Just again, you asked the other night, what's the most terrifying thing that we see with our kids and whatnot? I mean, just to say it again, it's the parents that are the most terrifying thing as a school bus driver. Because as a school bus driver, I see exactly how parents are with their kids, because their kids are that way.
Right.
So
but we also,
we have to take care of our
kids. Do some really good things.
You just know. Just as a warning.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's, you know, but I'm just saying that just to emphasize that you have to take care of yourself first and make sure you're in the right place. Just
that's
to
right.
reinforce what you
yeah.
were saying.
And then, you know, it's back to the airplane example, it's the same thing with, you know, you're supposed to put your oxygen mask on first before you put it on your children, and we've got to do that. It's a busy world. Okay, so one of the things that will combat anger in your home more than anything is if you come across to your children as a nurturing parent. Two things that happen is that you build up this reservoir of positive, loving, liking relationship with your child. And so two things happen. One is that the likelihood is less that you will purge your anger toward your child, or your child will purge their anger toward you. And then also when it does happen, your relationship recovers more quickly. And so here are the elements of the nurturing parent. And again, I can send this handout to you if you request it. First, these are questions to ask yourself. And I'm going to go through them. And so tick off in your mind to say, oh, I do that. I didn't know that was a good thing to do. I just kind of naturally do it. Say, whoa, that's great. Or say, that's something I don't do, but I can. I didn't know that was an important thing to do. So you have a list of, you know, maybe two or three or four things that you can work on. So the first question I'm going to ask you is, are you affectionate and friendly? Now, clearly, we are not our children's best friends, right? But we can always be friendly, and there's a difference. Okay, so how do you say to your children, I love you? I mean, you all love your children, so you might as well communicate it to them. If you do, you're communicating to your children that you're affectionate and friendly. Do you offer gentle touch? Every time you pick your child up, you're communicating that you love them and that you care about them, and it's a way of being affectionate and friendly. And of course, with teenagers, they don't want to be touched, right? So, but you can always give side hugs, right? or massage their back, okay? Or scratch their back. So those are some things you can do. Do you express love and limits at the same time? When you draw that line in the parenting sand and say, I cannot allow you to do that, especially with teenagers, say, it's because I love you so much. Because if you don't, they're going to think that you're doing it because you're mean and controlling. And so you got to say, it's because I love you, and my life would be so sad if anything ever happened to you. Okay. Do you spend time with your child in activities of particular interest to your child? So, you know, on their terms, they collect baseball cards. Do you sit down from time to time, 5 to 10 minutes, and help sort and show some interest in those baseball cards? If you do, you're being a nurturing parent. Okay, here's number two. Do you consider, and the most important word here is consider, do you consider your child's feelings, desires, and needs? It does not mean we need to indulge those feelings, desires, and needs, but do we communicate that we're considering them? And here's some ways to do that. Do you express interest in your child's opinions? So your child says, I have this idea. I think it would be really fun if grandma and grandpa and all aunts and uncles and cousins, then we go to Disneyland for a week together. Isn't that a good idea? And to say, no, for heaven's sake, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. Or to say, well, that is an idea. Let's think about how much that might cost or how the time would be, but you consider, okay? Do you reiterate your child's point of view? Or, you know, same kind of thing. Oh, so you think it'd be a good idea that we all go to Disneyland together, blah, 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 whatever that happens to be. Okay. Do you validate their wishes? It's one of the best skills in parenting. I remember when my son was little, we'd drive by McDonald's and he'd say, I just have to have McDonald's French fries. I just have to have it. And then, you know, so you shift into, well, Alan, I know you wish that you could have McDonald's french fries right now. And then pretty soon, as he got a little bit older, he'd say, we'd go by McDonald's and say, I wish that I could have McDonald's french fries. And then one time when my daughter graduated from college, we went over there for, I don't know, mom's weekend. Or no, for graduation probably. No, it was mom's weekend at Washington State. And she said, now mom, when I graduate in a few weeks, you and dad are going to buy me a new car, right? And I wanted to say, we just put you in your college. No, you're going to get a job. You've got a car to drive and you're going to get a job and make my own car. But no, I shifted into wishes. I know you wish, Anna, on graduation day that dad and I would drive up in a cute little red sports car. And some of your friends, they will be getting that cute little red sports car. But you can ask for anything. But it was, a wish, right? And unfortunately, it didn't come true. So anyway, do you acknowledge emotions but limit resulting negative behavior? So you can say, I know you're really mad at your brother, but I can't let you hit him. Okay, so that's all we've been talking about. Okay, the next one. Are you interested in your child's daily activities? Of course you are, so you need to communicate that. Do you complete the cycle of the conversation? Your child comes in and says, my team won at recess today. What are you going to say?
Sweet.
Pardon? So I have
tell me about it.
Tell me about it. Okay, so you can say that. What else?
What game are you playing?
What game are you playing? Okay. That completes the cycle of the conversation. It says, I heard what you said, I'm interested, and I want to know more. My teacher's cat had kittens.
What How
color?
Many?
How many? What color? Don't say you're not getting one. My friend just got a brand new car. What are you going to say?
What kind?
What kind?
What kind? Okay, you're not going to say you're not getting one. Okay, later. Where, you know, what kind is he getting? You know, who bought it for him? You know, you probably won't be getting one of those. Okay. All right. Do you offer props to support your children's play? If you have little kids and they're playing doctor and they're having a really good time and you notice they're interested in that, give them a couple of Band-Aids. Okay? So it says you're supporting their activities. Do you notice when children come and go? You do? Oh, hi, you're up this morning. Oh, now you're going out to play. Or you're going out to school. Oh, I see you're back. It says their presence and absence makes a difference. What if nobody noticed? You know, that would be really hard on kids. Are you a mentor to your child's success? As your children get into elementary school, you become a mentor to success. You don't do their projects for them, but you support them on that road. Okay, do you enter into an activity and let your child lead it? So same, we talked about that with building Legos, that let them be in charge. If you sit down and play with Legos and your child's building a house, build a similar house. Don't make yours better, okay? We just want to make it comparable to the child. It validates their competency. Okay, the next one is, do you express pride in your children's accomplishments? We talked about that yesterday. Pride is one way. It's a moral emotion that communicates to children your values, the virtues you hold dear, and it's a way to get children on the moral track that you want to underline. So, do you notice small steps toward competency? So when your child first writes their name and it's not perfect, you put it on the refrigerator, right? We're not going to say, oh, you forgot to put cross the T or dot the I. We're just going to... And then later we'll teach them how to cross the T and dot the I. We don't need to do that now. Do you cheer your children on? I hope so, that you're out there on cold, wet Saturday mornings, if you live in Seattle, watching your child play soccer, even if you know that they're never going to get a goal or maybe never even kick the ball, but we're there cheering them on. Okay, do you say, I like it when and I appreciate it when? I really like it when you take your plate from the table to the counter. They're learning things. They're in the process of learning, so we need to notice and take pride in their accomplishments. Do you observe their accomplishments? I mean, your child just learned how to ride a bike. I mean, you can say, oh, I'm so proud of you, or that's so great, but you can also say, show me. Let me see you do that. That's all you have to do. And then describe it. Boy, I can see that you got on your bicycle, and you went down the sidewalk, and you turned around and came back. Good for you. Okay, the last one is, do you offer support and encouragement during stressful times? That is your job as a parent. And, you know, we don't like to think that our kids have stresses, but they do. And I will end by telling this story because it relates to anger. And it exemplifies how a mother supported her daughter during a stressful time. So most of my professional life, I have taught parent education in the community college system in Washington State. And what that means is that the parents come with their children. There's a little preschool for the parent, for the children. Half of the parents work with the children and the teachers, and then the other half I take into an adjoining classroom and teach classes on parent education. So this day, it was a class on what to do when parents anger. And so, you know, I'm going in a little mine on the east side of Seattle. We're all sitting around, and I have my little checklist, and I'm going off, and pretty soon this mom says to me, Jen, you want to hear about anger? I will tell you about anger. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she said, this is what happened. She said, my daughters, ages 3 and 8, went to visit their father for the first time in 2 years. The mom and dad had been divorced. He had moved to Europe, remarried, moved back to Bellevue, and now was reengaging with his daughters, who he hadn't seen in 2 years, 3 years old and 8 years old. We're really glad that the dad is doing this. And so the girls went off for the weekend, the 8-year-old and the 3-year-old, to be with their dad and their new stepmom. And so you can imagine the stress in the life of this 8-year-old little girl that she hasn't seen her dad. Children always think that they had done something wrong, right, to cause this to happen. I did something wrong, and so my dad went away for 2 years, and so I'm going to be on my best behavior, which is a stress, and not only that, I'm going to look out for my 3-year-old sister because I don't want her to do anything else either. So she came home on Sunday night. The girls came home on Sunday night, went to bed, got up the next morning. The older child was not going to get dressed. She was not going to eat her breakfast. She was just mad, and it's what I call release after good behavior. She had been good all weekend, and now it was going to come out somehow. And so, you know, the mom wanted to say, get dressed, or I'm going to be late for work, and your sister's going to be late for childcare, and you're going to be late for school, and, you know, whatever. And the mom stopped, and she said, okay, I'm going to be late for work, and you're going to be late for school, and your sister's going to be late for childcare, and I want you to come and sit on my lap. And so they rocked, the big 8-year-old girl rocked back and forth, and this little girl's crying, these mad tears again. You know, I didn't like that lady. Why did Daddy go away? And why is he living with that lady in the house? And you know, I wanted to take scissors and cut up her dress. Well, I'm glad you really didn't do that. Well, maybe one would have been okay. Anyway, so, you know, she set limits on her behavior. You can be mad about the situation, but I'm not, you know, it's not okay to cut up anybody's dresses. But anyway, rocking back and forth, because remember, it's the reptilian brain that's in place. And pretty soon, the little girl calms down. You know, the mom could feel that she was getting calmer. But the mom didn't say anything. She's not problem solving. She's not offering solutions to the problem or anything. Then finally the little girl says, because now she's shifted back into the, you know, thinking part of her brain, and the little girl says, Mommy, when you die and Daddy dies, will you be married again in heaven? And so, of course, now the mother's crying. So the little girl, I mean, you think about this, and the only way this little girl could think that her life would ever be right again would be at the death of her parents, and that they would possibly be married again in heaven. But with that, the little girl, and the mother's answer was, I don't know, sweetheart, I don't know. And so with that, the girl jumped down, ate her breakfast, got dressed, and went out the door to school, or the mom took her to school. And as she's leaving for school, the mom says, if you feel sad at school today, who can you talk to? A teacher, principal, counselor, friend, somebody, okay? And those are the elements of a nurturing parent. That you offer empathy and understanding when your child experiences a difficult child situation. You express faith that things will eventually work out, if you can. You encourage the child to come up with ideas on their own, to problem solve, which this mother did. You ask who the child can get help from. or you ask, can I help you? And you're available to talk about the stressful situation. Another thing that really helps kids through stressful situations is to, or and all of us actually, Judy talked about control, is to cultivate, help children cultivate a hobby. Young children, it's play. Older children, it's a hobby, because when the whole world is falling apart out here, a hobby, which you control the time frame for that, will helps them feel competent and in control. So anyway, so I encourage you to do that. So anyway,